My real name is Eileen Patrice Gallagher Vining. They call me Patty Vining. I'm the director of the John M. Freeman Pediatric Epilepsy Center at Hopkins. I'm the letterer professor of pediatric epilepsy and a professor of neurology and peds.
So let's talk about pediatric epilepsy then. Pretty big problem.
It is. It's a very major problem. It's one of the most common neurological problems that the children actually do experience. And obviously, it's devastating when it occurs in a family because it is a terrifying thing. I think every parent who has watched their child have a seizure is terrified. Most parents would say they thought their child was dying. So part of our job is obviously to find out why it happened, what we ought to do about it, and spend a great deal of time helping parents make sure their children's lives are as normalized as they possibly can be when something like that happens.
Is there such a thing as a typical presentation? That is, most kids are 2 years old and they have this type of seizure or whatever?
Certainly, certain types of seizures are more prevalent at different times in life, and that relates obviously to the brain maturing. And certainly the seizures that happen typically in the first year of life are often the most devastating because they're a sign of underlying brain abnormality. Then we go through a time in early childhood and mid-childhood when we have some of the more benign epilepsies, and then we go into some more maturity in terms of juvenile and adolescent years, and we have another whole spectrum of seizure disorders. Unfortunately, seizure disorders that often the juvenile person does not ultimately outgrow, so that we really see peaks and valleys in terms of what we might expect.
So I think, I don't know if you'll agree with this statement or not, but if we take a look at wheezing, for example, wheezing is a symptom. It's not a disease. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if seizure disorders are symptoms. They're not the disease.
Absolutely. It is a symptom of something going wrong with the brain. And that's a very important concept for families to get, whether it's with asthma or with seizure disorder. And I think it's reflected in the fact that when parents think about a seizure disorder in their child in epilepsy, they think if everything is controlled, meaning the seizures are controlled, all will be fine with their child. And that's not true. When we think about a child with a seizure disorder, we recognize it's a symptom of something having gone wrong with the brain. And so other things may well be wrong with the brain. In particular, there's a very high incidence of learning disabilities, behavior disorders, psychological issues in children with epilepsy. And so that's really one of the hallmarks of our clinic, the fact that we've recognized that you need a very comprehensive approach to a child with seizures, maybe even more so than the child with asthma or diabetes. Certainly when the seizure happens, you can typically identify that, but we don't recognize all the other things that are going on behind the scenes so often in a child who has epilepsy. So it's very, very critical that we help parents understand that and deal with those problems as well as trying to be very sure that they've got control with medication or other treatments of the seizures themselves.
Since you've already said assessments, let's talk about assessments. When a seizure disorder, epilepsy, is suspected, what assessments are appropriate?
Well, it depends, number one, if you're talking about a seizure disorder or a first seizure. Recently, within the last year, our group, both the adult and the pediatric, but I think stemming heavily from the peds, made a decision that we wanted to set up something called a first seizure clinic. And we did that in recognition of the fact that overall 10% of people will have a single seizure in their lifetime.
That is a lot of people.
10%. And so that doesn't mean epilepsy, because epilepsy is recurring unprovoked seizures. We think it's very vital that people with expertise see that child or that adult and make sure, number one, that it's a seizure in the first place. Probably two-thirds of them truly are seizures once they've screened through their pediatricians, but a third at least aren't going to be. And the other thing is that we need to be sure that the appropriate workup is done. And that doesn't mean MRIs and CTs and a batch of lab tests. So it's very important, even in this day of trying to maintain better fiscal responsibility, that people who know that it's worthless to do these tests make sure that that's articulated and doesn't happen to the kid. Most children who have a first seizure should have an EEG. That's probably important in prognosticating whether it's likely to go on and become epilepsy, meaning recurrent seizures. people from the community who've had the first seizure and call, and we make it a policy to see them in a week. That's a pretty remarkable thing at Johns Hopkins. And obviously, on top of being practitioners in the community, we are part of a group of people that are, you know, number one in the nation, and certainly so in pediatric neurology and pediatric neurosurgery, as you perhaps know. And so we really do have referred to us some of the very most difficult to control seizure disorders. So we run the gamut in our practice from the neighborhood child who's had their first seizure that we're going to set on the right pathway, presumably not even treating but properly assessing, to the most complex form of epilepsy and everything in between.
Just tell me a little bit, and I know you can't really be specific because we're not delving into all the specific types of seizures, but what about the outlook for a child with epilepsy in general?
Well, as I suggested, there are types of seizure disorders that we know will be outgrown. So that's a group perhaps of youngsters that we call benign Rolandic epilepsy, and we expect that they're going to outgrow it by their teenage years. Then there are the individuals who require all of our expertise. These are individuals often with what we call very medication refractory or intractable epilepsy. Those are individuals in whom we have plied all of the dozen or so medications as intelligently as we can, and we've not been able to stop their seizures. At Hopkins, we can do something called a ketogenic diet, which has been in place in the world basically since the 20s. At Hopkins, probably since the 30s. In the 40s. So I grew up with it here. But in the last 15 years, it's really taken a major leap forward. Not only do we remain probably the center with the greatest expertise in the world, because we helped bring it back to life in the mid-90s, and we've been involved in very careful studies of the diet ever since then, we can then also, obviously, decide whether somebody's a potential surgical candidate. And of course, that is a very important aspect to be willing to consider in a child and not wait for the child to live their entire lives under the influence of really devastating seizures. And so we're able to bring a youngster into the hospital, provide them with what we call epilepsy monitoring, where we're actually able to record and analyze the seizures very carefully, sort out where it's coming from in the brain, and make a decision whether or not they're potentially a surgical candidate. That may mean directly to surgery from there, or it may mean even more intensive monitoring, where we place what's called a subdural electrode grid, where we put electrodes right on the surface of the brain and can map exactly where the seizures are coming from, and we can discern where we don't want to go, where there's eloquent tissue, where we have to say what are the pluses and minuses, what do we lose for the potential gain in terms of removing it to try to get rid of seizures. And then we work with the surgeons to draw the dotted line, basically, in terms of saying, yes, we want you to take this, but we don't want you to go near that tissue. And so we range, in terms of surgery, from very discrete small lesions to taking a hemisphere. For a child with epilepsy, overall, 70% to 80% should expect to have their seizures controlled. When you consider neurology as a whole, epilepsy is probably one of those specialties where you really have a potential for doing an awful lot of good.
That's a wonderful message. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
What I'd say is, especially to families, that if they've been working with a person and they've gone through two medications with a physician, then you ought to be asking the question, what else is going on? What other options do I have? That's where a tertiary center like Hopkins, and there are many, many very good epilepsy centers throughout the country. And in fact, we are almost unique in that we have a wonderful person who works within our group who takes phone calls and sends patients from, if we're Macy's, to Gimbel's. Because she's been working in the field for so many years, and she knows how important it is for children to be based as close to home as possible. Taking care of a child with epilepsy is a long-term commitment, and so we really try hard to help people find what we think are really good centers, tertiary centers such as ourselves, throughout the country. We do a very, very good job of trying to help people do that. Sometimes they want to come to Hopkins anyway because we are who we are, and we are happy to have them.
Very good. Thank you so very much for joining me.
Pleasure.